We light our chalice, a beacon of hope, a sign of our continuing quest for truth, goodness, and beauty. May our reason and our passion be likewise kindled, that our very lives become beacons to all people.
Good morning. We gather here this morning to create meaning together. Among us are straight men who enjoy sports and straight men who hate sports. There are gay men who love sports and gay men who consider sport a waste of time. In Unitarian and Universalist congregations across the country this morning, there are some women and some men and some intersex persons. There are a wide variety of gender expressions, including feminine and masculine and transgender. There are lesbians, heterosexuals, gay men, bisexuals, and there are asexual people who are simply not interested in sexual relationships. Gathered together in Kent, Ohio, and around the world, we co-create one strong body. This morning and every day, may we feel the deep worth in ourselves and see the sacred in every person. So may we be. I've never really been the strong, silent type of male. In fact, my wife sometimes asks if I have an off button she might use. Perhaps because I can be so talkative, I really appreciate a few minutes of silence every day. But I also have friends who do not find silence as useful in their lives. I invite us all to quiet ourselves and set aside our everyday concerns. Let us open ourselves to what it is that we find here and now. If you appreciate silence, may you find it. And if you do not, perhaps mentally chanting a word or phrase like peace or hope or love will serve you well. However you approach it, let us inhabit a few minutes of shared silence. Please join me in the spirit of prayer. Father Sky and Mother Earth, Sister Moon and Brother Sun, our Father who art in heaven, Grandmother Spirit who spins compassion and unsentimental love for all her children, Spirit of life which inflates our lungs and pulses in our throats, we are grateful to be alive this day. Grateful to be here among these people. We lift up the names just mentioned and those remaining in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts and minds. We desire compassion and courage, support for all those who would benefit, and celebration for those who would appreciate it. We pray also for those who are caregivers to the people mentioned, that they might find peace and strength in their work. We lift up the parental leave of Reverend Melissa and Ellen and Megan. May they come away stronger and rejuvenated with their time, and may the congregation learn about its own power and authority, and may the two rejoin in a few months to be an even stronger force for good in our world. We are aware of the people in Louisiana who lived through a tornado yesterday. We desire compassion and courage and support for them and for all those who were affected by weather this year. May there be creative minds in all of our leadership around this globe and find ways out of the weather changes that are happening. We hold in our hearts all the different sides around the union struggles in Wisconsin and now in Ohio. And again, may there be creative and heartful solutions to these issues in our world. We join those around the world celebrating International Women's Day, and especially in the celebrating a Rachel Sabbath, that fewer women should die in childbirth. We pray that fewer people of all sexes and genders die while caring for their families. And especially we desire that all children grow up in homes where they know they are loved. We know every person has some yin and some yang in their personality. Every person has some feminine energy and some masculine aspects in the ways they live in the world. We desire that all people find respect and appreciation for the particular balance of yang and yin they embody. We desire that however we are perceived, our energies be healthy and life-affirming as we think and feel and speak and act in the world. We desire enough food and shelter and peace of mind for all beings today. We pledge ourselves in pursuit of that goal. Praise for living. So may we be.
A Day at the Beach by Peter Schmidt. If he had been paying more attention to whatever my mother was saying from under her hat beneath the umbrella, or watching more closely over my brother, off playing somewhere with his shovel and pail, or me, idly tracing my name in the sand, if he hadn't had that faraway look, gazing out to where the freighters crawled along the horizon, so that when he suddenly pushed up and off, sand in his wake, visor taking wing behind him, you could believe, as he turned toward the glassy water, that it had just come to him to chuck it all. This whole idea of family and make for those southbound freighters and the islands. Then he might have never seen the arm heaved up, the lifeguards running just as my father was lifting the old man out of the surf and bearing him ashore, the blue receding from his cramped limbs. And as a crowd closed around the gasping figure struggling to his knees, my father turned back to us, sheepishly, almost back to the endless vigilance of husband and of father, which was all he had ever asked for in the first place.
Our second reading is from The End of Men by Hannah Rosen, and it's from the July-August 2010 edition of The Atlantic. Earlier this year, women became the majority of the workforce for the first time in U.S. history. Most managers are now women, too. And for every two men who get a college degree this year, three women will do the same. For years, women's progress has been cast as a struggle for equality. But what if equality isn't the end point? What if modern, post-industrial society is simply better suited to women?
Men are good, though it seems that we are very often quite misunderstood. Men are good, we are not bad, so please let go of any misconceptions that you had. Men are good, men are good, men are good. Men are kind, we have gentle loving hearts and creative thinking minds. Men are kind, we are not mean, in spite of all the television images you've seen. Men are kind, men are kind, men are kind. Men need rest, we are brought up to believe we're disposable at best. Men need rest, we work too hard, and a day awake from work does not mean working in the yard. Men need rest, men need rest, men need rest. Men should play, men should have the right to have a little fun with every day. Men should play, well it's okay, I hear God even took a break on the seventh day. Men should play, men should play, men should play. Men are bright, solving problems every day. We bring hope and we bring light. Men are bright, we are not dumb. If you see a man with troubles, that does not mean he's a bum. Men are bright, men are bright, men are bright. Men love peace, And we wish that all this crazy macho Rambo stuff would cease. Men love peace, men hate war. And I'm here to tell you we will not be fighting anymore. Men love peace, men love peace, men love peace. Men are great, men are great. Whether changing stinky diapers or employed as heads of state, men are great. The world around, from Tokyo to Mozambique and tiny Russian towns, men are great, men are great, men are great. Seems that we are very often quite misunderstood. Men are good, we are not bad. So be let go of any misconceptions that you've had. Men are good, men are good, men are good, 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 good.
Thank you all, that was lovely. And thank you, Reverend Katie, and thank you, Max, for all your help this morning, too. And Karen did a marvelous job. Thank you. How many of you have ever remarked about the characters on some television show or other that such a slovenly, selfish bore of a man would not stand a chance of marrying such an attractive, wise, and self-possessed young woman? Anyone notice that sometimes? How many have noticed that there are a lot of movies recently starring unkempt, underemployed, 20-something-year-old males who still live in their parents' basements? Few? How many of you are at least a little concerned that these movies reflect a reality where a whole generation of young men are not, as their parents might say, living up to their potential? If so, you are not alone. Quite a few books and articles have been written about slacker males and their extended adolescence. Our second reading was from the cover story, Atlantic Magazine, from last summer, and the full title was The End of Men, How Women Are Taking Control of Everything. There was also a side piece published in that article which asked, Are Fathers Necessary? My response, exactly, in fact, yes. More recently, Kay Heimowitz just published a book asking whether today's slacker males will ever be ready to hold down a good job, parent a child, or serve as a good partner or spouse. Now, before we get too much farther into this, let us remember that not too long ago we were all worried about young girls not being educated well enough as their male classmates, and now women and girls are outperforming men and boys in virtually every educational category. So I'm not prepared to panic quite yet. But it's worth a closer look. Is there really a generation of young men whose only real accomplishments are the high scores on various video games? And if there is such a generation, what might that mean for our society and our Unitarian Universalist tradition? Our text for this discussion is the movie The Kids Are All Right, written by Lisa Chulodenko and Stuart Blumberg, and directed by Lisa Chulodenko. How many of you have seen The Kids Are All Right? A bunch of us. Those of you who have not seen it, I'm going to give away a lot of spoilers this morning. I apologize. But do go rent it or watch it sometime. I'm talking about part of the film. There are a bunch of other parts I won't be talking about, and even the parts that you know are coming. The actors are great in it, and it'll be worth your time. So, there is one aspect of the film I will mention besides the whole male and masculine spirituality piece. In a film with 5 main characters, 5 secondary characters, and a few bit parts, there are only 3 characters of color, and all 3 of them are treated unjustly at some point in the film. I loved the movie. I thought it definitely deserved its Best Picture Oscar nomination. And it does reflect our cultural unconscious racism. If you want to explore that part of the movie more, please talk to me later. We'll focus on the men stuff now. The kids in the film's title are Joni and a Laser. Their parents are Nick and Jules, two lesbians who've been together for a very long time. Laser is Joni's half-brother because Nick and Jules used the same sperm donor. Then Nick carried Joni and Jules gave birth to Laser. As the movie starts, Joni has recently turned 18 years old, and Laser has asked her to contact the fertility company so he can meet his biological father. Joni is afraid it will hurt Mom's feelings if they find out, so she swears Laser to secrecy, but finally makes the call. The sperm donor's name is Paul, and he's now a 30-something single restaurateur and organic farmer. When they meet, Laser is not impressed. But Joni is surprised to discover she actually likes him. The moms do find out, of course, but they respect the kids' curiosity about their origins, and so they agree to meet Paul, too. Eventually, every member of the family has their own relationship with Paul. He passes on some fatherly wisdom to the kids. He becomes the first customer of Jules' fledgling landscaping business, and he even bonds with Nick over their love of Joni Mitchell. Unfortunately, as with many relationships in this world, time and inattention have taken their toll. One day after Nick's medical practice has come between them yet again, Jules is feeling quite lonely, and she kisses Paul. And they have an affair. And Nick discovers the affair, and Jules ends up on the couch. And Joni and Laser are mad at their mom, Jules, and they're mad at their father, Paul. And all of the main characters go through some intense soul-searching. Now, on the last night before Joni goes off to college, the still uncomfortable family is having a final dinner together. Paul shows up to apologize to Joni and ask to see her again someday. She's not really sure, and she tells him, "I wish you could have been better." And then Nick comes to the door and intercedes and tells Paul to leave. "This is not your family. This is my family," she says. "If you want a family, go make your own." That night, Jules apologizes to Nick and Joni and Laser, saying relationships are hard, and she begs their forgiveness. The next morning, they take Joni to school, and they each take a step that shows they will be all right in the long run. Now, there are no 20-something males in the film, so it doesn't speak directly to the issue, but there are a few that are close to slackerhood. Laser may be on his way to being a slacker. Nick certainly believes he's not living up to his potential, but he's 15, so really the future is open at that point. Joni's friend Jay is right at the cusp of slackerhood. We get the sense that Jay could be Joni's boyfriend, except he wants nothing to do with sex or romance. At one point, Jay remarks he feels sorry for another of Joni's friends, Sasha, because she has to sexualize everything. We don't know how competent or successful Jay is in other pursuits, but he's clearly not eager to take the next step along that path. Paul appears to have been a slacker in his 20s. He dropped out of college. He earned money by donating bodily fluids. He now owns his own business, but he has no family and apparently no long-term relationships either. We'll talk a little more about whether Paul's a slacker in a few minutes, but we'll assume now he was a slacker in his mid-20s a decade or so ago. Now, a decade or so before that, even, I myself was a slacker. In the spring of 1990, I'll start that again. In the spring of 1988, I had dropped out of college. I was planning to follow a girl to California where she was moving to be with her boyfriend. Slacker, I'm telling you. And I was working part-time at a local bookstore. During my lunch hour at that bookstore, I was allowed to borrow books to read while I ate. I was pleased and encouraged to read about a then-new phenomenon of teenagers and young adults taking longer to begin their adult lives. The author suggested that these youth, having gone through identity crisis early in their lives, would be less susceptible to midlife crises later. This made me feel good. I was not behind my peers. I was ahead of things. In the year 2000, around when our fictional film father would have been slacking, Sharon Delos Parks published a book about the phenomenon, Her Big Questions Worthy Dreams was subtitled Mentoring Young Adults in the Search for Meaning, Purpose, and Faith. Professor Parks proposed a new life stage between adolescence and adulthood, approximately 17 to 30 years old. She called it young adulthood, describing it as a time of testing, deeper than adolescent experimentation, but far more wary and ambivalent than the firm commitments of later adult life. According to Parks, young adults need mentors and mentoring communities to help them grow into mature adulthood. She did not see this as a gendered issue, but more recent authors do. Hannah Rosen's statistics in The Atlantic do seem to show that young women are advancing where young men are not. Perhaps the women are experiencing that young adult phase as described by Parks and getting mentored more quickly through it. Perhaps they're not experiencing it at all. Or perhaps, according to Kay Heimowitz, maybe the females are to blame for the males' lack of success. Her new book is titled Manning Up: How the Rise of Women Has Turned Men into Boys. Her descriptions of confused young men uncertain about their roles in feminist world do match some of the statistics in Rosen's article. Heimowitz does seem to sympathize with this generation dropped onto the stage without scripts. I do agree with some of her analysis. Our culture does lack appropriate coming-of-age rituals, and there aren't very many good masculine role models in TV and movies. But while I agree with some of her findings, Heimowitz is way off base, in my humble opinion, when she blames the phenomenon on women. Correlation does not imply causation. Furthermore, testosterone is built for challenge. If young men were not already opting out of competition, they'd enjoy competing with women and females. I believe Heimowitz has it exactly backwards. Young women are not pushing young men off the playing field. The men are abandoning it and leaving it to the women to excel. Now, please note, I'm not saying women can only win if men allow them to do so. I'm saying women and men are basically equal, and since men are giving up, women are surging ahead. So why are men giving up? My hypothesis is this: the slackers of today are like the flappers of a century ago. Not quite 100 years ago, flappers were young women who experimented with their masculine yang energy. They left behind traditional notions of femininity and instead took control of their sexuality. And they smoked and drank and they drove cars. Nowadays, the pendulum has swung all the other way, and young men are experimenting with their feminine yin energy. They're abandoning outmoded understandings of masculinity, competing less, and relating more. As I sat in a coffee shop recently, there was a group of 5 young adults sitting near me. There were 3 boys and 2 girls chatting and laughing and otherwise passing the time on a Saturday afternoon. They flirted a little, but mostly they seemed to be platonic friends. And they discussed topics like movies and video games and pizza places, and they gossiped about their other acquaintances. And then 2 of the girls and the most handsome boy went outside to smoke a cigarette, leaving the other 2 to guard their seats and their stuff. Of the 2 left behind, 1 boy was slightly overweight. He had one of those big spiral earrings in one in the ear that I could see, and a bit of acne. He wore a baggy t-shirt advertising some band or game or something. The other boy seemed underweight, scrawny and slump-shouldered, with unkempt hair and a leather jacket, attempting to make him look more formidable. The boy with the pierced ear was talking to the skinny one, and he said something like, "You'll be fine. You don't have a job, but you do have direction. You have goals, you just don't have a way to implement them yet. Hang in there." And the bigger boy continued, "Look at me. I don't have a job, but I stay home and watch after my little sister. Every day I make dinner for my family, so I guess I do have a job. I just don't get paid for it." The others came in about then, and the 2 quit their conversation. Now, frankly, I had been a little annoyed by the teenagers or the young adults sitting around the room earlier, and I found myself sympathizing with them now. This young man babysits and cooks and helps his family cope with the challenges of 21st century living, and he reaches out to his buddy trying to help him as he comes to grip with his situation. The male role was once defined as protector and provider, the endless vigilance of husband and father, like we heard in the first reading. The female role was defined in terms of nurturing and relating and comforting. The young man in the coffee shop was demonstrating more of the latter than the former, and I absolutely celebrate that fact. Now, after the flappers held their heyday, most of them moved a bit back toward the more traditional roles. They did not revert all the way into conformity, no, no. But they found a sustainable balance between the old roles and their newfound freedom. If the same thing happens with today's slackers, then they'll eventually resume some of the masculine pursuits of status and success, but they'll also retain the nurturing aspects which they found fulfilling. In a way, this is the culmination of the feminist revolution. It began by freeing women from their traditional stereotypical roles, and now we're freeing men from their traditional roles. And the film demonstrates this pretty effectively. Once a slacker, Paul is now evolving into a more fully realized adult with both masculine and feminine characteristics. He runs a successful business. He mentors both Laser and Joni into standing up for themselves with their friends and their family members. Yet he also relates to them in a more egalitarian fashion than the traditional authoritarian father's knows best style. Paul also joins Nick in singing a soulful version of a Joni Mitchell ballad. And after the song, Laser laughs and teases his mom, "Don't quit your day job." And Paul admonishes him, "Don't say that. It's hard enough to open your heart. Don't make it any harder." If Paul was indeed once a slacker, then that time served him well. And may all of today's slackers be as successful in embodying both feminine and masculine traits in their full adulthood. By the end of the film, all of the major characters have demonstrated both yin and yang, both traditional and non-traditional behaviors. If it takes a few extra years to develop that, I suggest it might be worth it. Now, what does this mean for our culture in general and for our UU tradition in specific? Regrettably, too many things to enumerate fully in the time I have left this morning. You'll have to invite me back next year, and Max Grubb and I will do some more work for you. But in a few minutes, here are some things to think about. First of all, I think we UUs can lead the charge in affirming slackers and slacker culture. I suppose we could start by finding a different word than slacker. We certainly want to challenge the judgmental statements about young men and young women of authors like Heimowitz. Unitarian Universalists can offer safe spaces, including covenant groups, to explore each person's unique gender identity in whatever blend of masculine, feminine, and neutral characteristics feels appropriate and natural to each person. We can work to find mentors to help provide challenge and support as our young people grow and evolve. We can support healthy yang energy and healthy yin energy in every combination. We can speak against unhealthy behaviors without condemning the entire gender. We can discourage domination and alienation while still supporting healthy yang aspects like autonomy and strength. We can encourage yin traits like care and compassion while warning against losing one's self in dependence or fusion. How many of you know what an OWL program is? Most of you, I love that fact. OWL is an acronym for Our Whole Lives, the sexuality education curriculum developed by our Unitarian Universalist Association and United Church of Christ. It's a spectacular curriculum which tells kids the scientific truth about their sex and sexuality without subjecting them to moralistic and harmful stereotypes and lies. Not incidentally, young people who've taken an OWL course are much less likely to have sex early and have fewer unplanned pregnancies because good education helps make better choices. In my own fantasy world, every UU church in the world would offer an OWL course every single year to their own members and to every child in the local community that they can drag through the doors. OWL training will help our young people navigate their extended adolescence and learn to unself-consciously and proudly embody both feminine and masculine sides. We can offer more coming-of-age rituals, offer maiden-mother groups and father-son campouts with appropriate flexibility so that we're celebrating a type of energy and not specific biological parts. Finally, we can learn to embrace conflict and teach and practice disagreeing in love. This is something virtually all of us can use. I know I can use it in my life, not merely our young people, but all of us can learn. In Sharon DeLoe's Parks book, she notes that mentoring communities must offer young persons encounters with those who are different from them so they can learn about boundaries. A like-minded community is a good thing to experience. It's important for us to have. It's an oasis in a seemingly hostile world. And it also can lead to tribalism and unconscious self-censorship. We are stronger when we can name our disagreements publicly and still engage with appreciation and respect those whose opinions differ from us. And I promise you, there are different opinions in this room. At the end of the film, Joni puts her father's hat into the car. She will take him along with her to her school, and there is hope that someday they will maintain a relationship. And as they drive away in the car, Nick driving, she and Jules take hands. Relationships are hard, whatever our sex or gender or identity or orientation. Fortunately, we can continue to grow and learn and evolve and relate for as long as we are alive. And so may we be.
Good morning. Indra's Net challenges us to consider how we inspire others and how others inspire us. We are each a jewel in Indra's Net, reflecting back all the others. This year, as I make my commitment to the stewardship campaign, I want to bring attention to a few jewels in this community who have touched my life. When I first started attending the church in 2001, my home life was in a turmoil. I was in a crumbling marriage, racked by problems of alcoholism. Thanks to a wonderful group of folks, my church family became an anchor for my daughter Kelly and myself when I signed up to attend that Falls Walden camping trip. Kelly and I loaded up the car one Friday afternoon and headed for the Allegheny National Forest. We didn't arrive till after dark, and we were hungry and we were tired. I was really worried about setting up the tent and getting Kelly fed. But no sooner did I pull in than Jim Scott was directing me to a spot and helping me pitch the tent. And 5 minutes later, Randy and Mary Leeson were energetically feeding us the full Mexican buffet. This simple grace. I'm sorry. Their kindness and their generosity to us, these new church newcomers, was a breath of fresh air to me that weekend, and I'll never forget it. Mary and Randy and Jim and the rest of the Walden gang are one of the many reasons that I am renewing my financial commitment to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent during this year's stewardship campaign. I'll be pledging 2.5% of my income. As you consider your own planned donation, I hope you'll think of the many ways others in our congregation have touched your life, and how might you reflect back what they've given to you. I also want to mention that we do have an express box located in our basement. There are pledge cards downstairs that you can get from the people attending the table, and by putting your pledge in this box, you do guarantee that you will skip your call from your friendly canvasser. So, thank you.
Gabriel Garcia Marquez writes that we are not born all at once, but life obliges us to give birth to ourselves over and over again. May we do that with love and peace and joy and masculine and feminine parts together. So may we be.